Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 3rd, 2014, and you're listening to episode 92. I remember the date, but I had trouble with the episode number. My name's Rob. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Rob.
He's here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both
shaking
here.
Shaking my head at you, because you can't seem to get stuff right with dates and numbers. I feel like you should hold up flashcards over here.
I feel like you should stop mumbling in the microphone so people can actually hear you. Yeah. So, and stop playing with the microphone stand.
I'm never going to stop playing with the microphone
and
stand.
I'm going to give you crap about it every time you do.
I just never get it in the exact right spot I want it.
Well, then just...
That's better.
Okay.
But see, I'm going to shift it a minute, and then I'm going to be like, oh, this mic is in the wrong spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to
move it. We need arms. We need those big arms, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then look into that.
In the studio that we have, the mythical, magical studio that we might have someday in the future.
Because they could just come right out of the ceiling, right?
Oh,
and
man.
We're done, we just push them back up?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Sweet.
Yeah, Christine would never let me do that in this room ever.
You probably shouldn't.
No.
I mean, honestly.
No, no. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's just going?
It's just going.
Just going and going and going?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, thanks everybody for listening to Building the Game Podcast.
This is a super fun show
already. It's the best. Hey, oh man, I had a rough day.
You did.
I had a rough day. First of all, I want to say, anybody out there who may have missed it, a couple of weeks ago, about a week and a half ago, we put up a bonus episode. Christine and I, and my wife and I had gone to Chicago to see some family, and while we were there, I had reached out to Max Temkin, kind of the main dude in charge of Cards Against Humanity, and asked Max if I might stop by their office and interview him for the show, and he was all for it, and we talked for almost an hour and a half, and I recorded it for the show, and it was a fantastic interview.
Absolutely fantastic.
Really, really happy with it. We got a lot of really good feedback on it. So if you missed that, and if you're at all interested in a smart person's feelings about game art and game design and graphic design, it is well worth your time.
Right. And, you know, one of the pieces of feedback one of the things people have said to us is, I don't even like Cards Against Humanity, and this interview was awesome.
Yeah.
You actually don't talk about it that much.
No. I mean, there's some obligatory conversation about it, but
right.
It's not about cards. It's about design. I wanted to have a conversation with him about design.
You could tell that Max was excited about that.
I hope so. I really, really enjoyed it a lot, and I'm going to be eternally grateful to him for his time and to his events manager, Trin, who was also sitting in the interview with us.
Right.
They made time for me that day, and I will be forever grateful. So, today I was called out on some crappy comments that I made. See, I have this website, poorlydesigned.com, that no one ever looks at. In fact, I went back and looked at my Google Analytics today, and between December 1st and today when we're recording this, which is February 25th, I had a total of 74 hits on the website. In almost months, only 74 hits on my website. And that's okay. I'm all right with that. And I know that. And so sometimes I blog on there about game stuff, and I know that no one's going to read it. Ever. And so I just mumble and I vomit words. And then as soon as I'm done vomiting words, I forget all about it. Completely forget all about it. So, While we were in Chicago, I mentioned to Trin about HoboCon, about the stupid HoboCon thing that me and Jason and our buddy Will did several years ago, where we were hobos at Gen Con and we filmed it as a documentary. We've talked about that before. I offered to send Trin a copy of HoboCon for her to take a look at. And she got it in the mail, and she tweeted about that today and about how excited she was to watch it. And then apparently some people started trying to find stuff about HoboCon and started going to my website today to see if they could learn more about HoboCon through my website, which is not the right choice.
Nope.
Shame on us for letting HoboCon.com die. I mean, I still own the .com.
Oh, do you? Is there even content on it?
No, there's nothing. There's just a GoDaddy placeholder page.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so Graham from Loading Ready Run, he's kind of the main dude in charge of, I don't know if he's in charge, but he's kind of the main face of Loading Ready Run, which is a production company that filmed the Tabletop Deathmatch, in which I was a finalist.
Right.
He apparently was interested in HoboCon and went to my website and saw that I had, in some frustration back in December, I had complained about not having any news about status of the deathmatch. And I said some inappropriate things.
Now, and at that point, when you posted that, they were a couple months behind when they said it would be ready.
Right,
and,
but you know, I don't need to justify.
Oh, no, I was just saying where you were kind of in the place.
Right.
You were having a bad day.
I was having a bad day.
And you wrote it on the internet.
I wrote it on a website that I never thought anyone would ever look at. And I mainly just did it to get out of my system, you know? And shame on me for doing that. And
supposed to just come over to my office at work and talk to me about that.
It was probably a Saturday. I don't know. Anyway, I should not justify that. It's not like I said really horrible things, but just you know, bad taste, poor taste.
You poke some fun.
Bad move on my part.
Right.
And Graham found that, and he called me out on that on Twitter today, and he was absolutely right to do so, and I am a great big jerk.
Yep.
And if this was not a family-friendly show, I would use stronger words to describe myself.
Like the ones you did on your website.
Right. I am eternally, eternally sorry, and I'm sure that they will never listen to this, but just in the off chance that they will, I'm so sorry, guys. I'm so sorry. I'm embarrassed, and I'm ashamed of myself, and I'm not proud. So I apologize publicly, openly. I know for sure that more people listen to this than read my website.
Well, probably.
So
you have to track to see if a bunch of people go. If you go to his website, you're not going to see
said. My Google Analytics tomorrow, and and I'll see how many hits I got from that. But yeah, no. So anyway, I'm sorry publicly. I'm sorry to Graham and everyone at Letting Ready Run for those comments, and sorry to the kind people at Cards Against Humanity who maybe got wind of any of that, and I'm a jerk. So
true story. It didn't help that while you were telling me what's happening, I was reading it off your website, just laughing at you because I didn't know it was out there either.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a good friend who never reads my website. It doesn't tell me when I say stupid things that I should get rid of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I thought you had better, you know, like the show never contains anything stupid. And, you know, that's one of the things we talked about was I said, this is a great reminder of why we're always positive on the show and why we don't talk negative about, I mean, sometimes we give our negative opinions, but I mean, we certainly wouldn't say something super negative about someone.
Right.
Lesson learned, everyone.
Right. So anyway, again, apologies for that. I'm still embarrassed. I'm going to be embarrassed about this for a few days.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a jerk. Hey, surprise. People are jerks on the internet sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
At least you were a jerk on your own website and everyone knew that it was you writing it. You were like in a comment section somewhere saying something nasty with a fake name.
Yeah.
Because that's not cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that what you did is cool. Yeah. But it'd be worse if you did it that way.
Yeah. So anyway, I will aspire to be better in the future. So what you been playing, Jason?
Mostly prototype stuff.
Yeah.
Really specifically, I've talked before about wanting to design a game that was inspired by Mexican Train Dominoes.
Yeah.
And I did, and you and I tried it, and it didn't work great.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to try a new version in a couple of days that I actually already tried with my wife. That's better. It's not like Mexican Train Dominoes anymore. Now it's just a deduction game on trains.
Yeah. That was just the original inspiration. But, we recorded that playtest we did. That's going to be coming up this coming Wednesday. You guys will be able to hear that as a bonus episode,
which you actually, that one is going to be the Wednesday after the show post.
Right. Yeah. Last Wednesday you heard a playtest that we recorded of Rocket Wreckers. So the most recent revision of that, and that's gone through a few revisions, since then as well.
Yep. So we'll get another one up with that eventually too.
In the next couple of weeks, probably.
And we're trying really hard to do these lunchtime recordings once a week.
It's working pretty well.
It's nice. I mean, we're playing the game, and I know some of you guys like to hear the playtest episodes.
And some of you guys hate it.
Yeah, and if you hate it, hey, you know, there should all be like...
We'll try and do that.
So just skip those if you want. Mm-hmm. So
no hard feelings,
gang. You can download them.
Yeah.
And then just delete them.
Not even listen to them, because we could use the numbers. You know, doesn't hurt us. Doesn't hurt us, doesn't hurt you.
Just saying, if you're a big fan, you just download the show. Actually, most people, I'm sure, have it just auto-subscribed. That's what I do with most podcasts that I listen to.
Yeah, me too.
Just let it do that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I have been playing on my PlayStation. I've been playing Metro Last Light.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me at work a little bit.
Yeah, I'm kind of digging it. It's a first-person shooter, but it's kind of a weird mix. Sometimes it's a shooter. Sometimes it's almost like an RPG. Sometimes it's like some kind of stealth game. It's extremely Russian. It's like, I mean, it takes place in post-apocalyptic Moscow, or the metro subways underneath. I think Moscow, some Russian, big Russian city, presumably Moscow. So everybody has a Russian accent and on and on.
They speak English though?
Yeah. I think you can play it in Russian with English subtitles, but even if you're playing in English, you need the subtitles sometimes. But I think the studio that made it also is Russian, but I don't know that for sure. At any rate, I'm really kind of enjoying it. It's an interesting world that's been built there. I know this is a sequel. The original is Metro 2033. It's based on a novel.
I heard that's a really good
game. I have that. I got that on Steam for free through a promotion, but I haven't played it yet because I don't play a lot of games on my PC.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, Metro Last Light. I'm digging that. Not super far into it right now, but so far it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Cool.
Anyway, so, that's about all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now it's time for smooth jazz.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you write up some smooth jazz
on
one of your programs, and you can just insert some smooth jazz there.
Hey, Something from Nothing the other night. We debuted TC's theme song.
We did.
I wonder if maybe I should try and do some music to play behind that. Or maybe I could like remix TC's thing into... I don't know. I don't know if that's possible, if I'm good enough at that.
I don't think TC's going to let you, man. No. Plus, why would you mess with the most perfectest song ever made?
It was pretty great, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, and speaking of Something from Nothing, Something from Nothing is on iTunes now.
Yeah, sure is.
So by the time you're hearing this episode, that episode will be up. That was episode 13. Mm-hmm. We're just flying through the episodes now.
I know, it's crazy. And we have a big guest coming up on Something from Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in last week, I mean, mm-hmm. we had some great guests. Yes. We had AJ Perferio on, and also Matt Leacock.
Mm-hmm. Matt Leacock, designer of Pandemic and Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert and Roll Through the Ages.
Yeah. So,
it's a big get for us.
So yeah. I mean, it's been great. TC Penny does an amazing job of finding people in.
He sure does,
and he's got some pretty awesome people lined up, so yeah. We're pretty excited.
Big name coming soon. I think official announcement will be probably next week sometime.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Or maybe, I guess, later this week when this episode posts.
Yeah.
So look forward to that. That's enough babbling and self-promotion, though, and apologizing. We are pretty good at that, it's true. we, two, 3 weeks ago, talked to Scott King?
Yes, we did.
And Scott proposed a holiday game design contest where we wanted people to send in their game pitches based on or inspired by holidays, and inspired by the minor holidays, the forgettable holidays, not Christmas.
The obscure holidays,
right. Send us a game based on something a little bit lesser known. And the winner of that contest, there's first and second place, the winner of the contest will get a free photo shoot by Scott, either of a game of their choice or of a game of their own design.
Yep.
He will photograph all their components just for fun or to help you with Kickstarter campaign or whatever you want to do.
Yep.
Which is pretty exciting.
And then second place gets the big box of cubes, or
big tub
of cubes.
1,000 cubes, 100 cubes, or 110 colors.
Yeah. So there's 1,000 total. And we can't.
That's super cool.
So with that contest, we agreed last week that we would both pitch a game for the contest.
Yeah.
And we thought we'd do it a little different this time. We would just do it in one episode.
Yeah. So we'll skip the feature this week.
Yep.
Then we're just going to do a dual pitch show here.
Yep. Where we're both going to pitch. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you might as well.
Okay, cool. So, all right. Well, I'm gonna start out by saying, this pitch is going to be a little funny.
Okay.
Because, as a designer, we're so often constrained by the rules of kind of, you design what you could make, right?
Right.
You don't just go out and design crazy. You design things that you think you could turn into a game.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you think about sellability, some designers do, some designers don't. But at the base start of it, most designers think, can I make this into a game? And what would it be like to prototype it? Well, I decided to just throw all that out the window and do something a little different. All right, so this game, It's a little crazy. It's called A Field Guide to Obscure Holidays.
Okay. I think I'm already a little worried about this.
I'm going to read you the stats on how you play it.
Okay.
It's for 3 to 6 players.
Okay.
Recommended ages 18 plus, but 16 plus is probably fine.
Okay.
Play time is 1 year. last time I said this game was going to be played in real time.
A real time
game. And when I say real time, boy, do I mean real time. Okay. So I'm going to give you a quick basic rundown of how the game works,
okay.
And then I'll give some cool examples of how, like, exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so this game, like I said, is played in real time over the course of the year. It would start in the beginning of the year, and so, well, actually, it would start at the end of the year. So sometime in December. Maybe for Christmas, if you wanted to, this could be everyone's Christmas present, is this awesome game.
Sounds like the best Christmas gift ever.
It is. The starting person, would mail out these cards to everyone. So, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me start with the components. It's real simple. 36 card deck. Each card has a value written on it. Values ranged between 13 being the best and 1 being the worst. But there's a different number of every card. There's only 1 13, there's only 1 1, but as you gravitate towards the middle, there's 5 7s, you know. I'm not going to read the whole list, but you get the picture.
Okay.
And along with that, there is one card that's called the All-Knowing Holiday card, and we'll get back to that one. That one does not have a rank written on it.
Okay.
Okay. In addition, there are 36 challenge cards, and we'll get back to those. Those have challenges on them you're going to have to perform during the game.
Great.
Okay. So, this game, I will say, is best played with 6 players. I think it'd be most fun with 6 players.
Okay.
So, here's how it works. At the beginning of the game, sometime in December, the person who's setting up the game will randomly shuffle the cards, all 36 of the number cards, shuffle them up, divide them into, for a 6-player game, you'd get 6 for each person.
Mm-hmm.
For less than that, you just break it out as evenly as possible, randomly giving the extra cards to one of the people you're mailing it to, or yourself, depending on. So,
okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
You throw them in the old snail mail and send them out. People get their cards. Now, included in that would also be 1 challenge card for each holiday.
Hmm.
Okay.
Each holiday.
Yes, because we're going to play this over the course of 6 obscure holidays.
6 obscure holidays, okay.
All right. Okay, so now that everybody's all set, the first holiday is going to be in January. Uh-huh. And that holiday is Penguin Awareness Day.
Penguin Awareness Day.
And on Penguin Awareness Day, you're all going to meet at a zoo. The zoo must have penguins, because otherwise, what's the point?
Well, Penguin Awareness.
Okay, yeah. When you get to this zoo, here's what's going to happen. Looking through my notes here. Okay. Sorry, I'm looking through my notes on my phone because I forgot to print this because I'm a big loser.
Big loser. Big time loser.
So at each location, the players will meet up, and then one player is chosen at random to reveal a challenge card. And they take out their challenge card and they set it face up. And it will say something that has to be done. It could be some sort of social challenge, like talk to this specific person, get them to do this for you. Like, or it could be a physical, like we're going to, you know, race in something. So it could be okay. Any sort of different thing. Right. And the idea is that all 6 would be completely unique and different, mm-hmm. playing on a different strong suit, possibly, of each player. So that challenge card is face up. Everyone can see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to, all the players have their 6 cards that are covered in points, right? They're going to look at those and they're going to think, how well do I think I'm going to do on this challenge?
Mm.
Do I think I'm going to win? And they're going to pick a point value card to play. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So they've, you know, anywhere between 13 and 1. They're going to take it. They're going to play it face down. They all get pushed together, sealed in an envelope, go complete the challenge. Challenge complete. Everyone comes back together. Open the envelope. Hand it to the winner, right?
Mm-hmm.
The winner is going to look at it, and they're going to pick a card out of there. Now, when they pick a card, they have 2 choices. They can take said card and keep it, which is going to give them that many points.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can take the card and put it face down in front of another player, which is going to give them that many negative points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But it's face down. we're going to go through around from after that first player, you're just going to go to the left, right?
Yeah.
Until everyone has done that. Everyone has given out their card. Then you reveal and see what everybody's points are. Okay. Mm. Write it down on a score pad somewhere. Next challenge, rinse and repeat 5 times, right? So now you've done all the challenges. Now, at some point, someone's going to have played the All-Knowing Holiday card. And if you see that in there, you're welcome to take it if you want. If you take it, that means you're going to get to choose where the meeting place is for the next obscure holiday.
Hmm.
Might be able to give yourself a home court advantage. And we'll get to that as we go to the other holidays. You following me so far?
Okay.
Okay.
I don't think you should be forced to meet at a zoo. I think you should just be required to meet at a place with penguins and leave that open to players' interpretation.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. That's good. All right. The other ones are a bit more ambiguous. So.
Okay.
Cool. So the first one, you kind of all just agree together on where to meet. And after that, it's when the players get to decide. Now, after everyone's done with the challenges and all the points have been determined, now all the players take turns passing their cards out one by one to each other, like in a reverse draft. Like, I look at my cards, I give one to you, you give one, you give... Now, we don't all have the same necessary cards, but in the end, we all have to have the same amount of cards again. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So, if you don't have any cards, but everyone else has, and I still have 6 cards left, which is highly unlikely, let's say that happened, I would just have to give all my 6 cards to you. Because the idea is that everyone has to have 6 cards given to them by the end. So now you've randomly been given these cards, right? Well, not randomly. It was decided by each player.
Sure, right.
Okay. Now you go home, right? And sometime during that time, you're contacted by the player who had the All-Knowing Holiday card who will say, this is where we're going to meet next. In the meantime, so after you find that out, you know what challenge you're bringing and you know what other people have. And now, boom, next meeting place. So that's basically the layout of the game.
Okay.
So let's talk about the other places and the other holidays. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the other holidays are in March, you'll meet. So you get a month off in between of time. In March, you will meet for Freedom of Information Day. On Freedom of Information Day, you are required to meet at a state capital or a country's capital. As determined by the player. So you could completely hose players, like say you spoke Spanish and you said, I'm the only one that speaks Spanish. We're going to go to Mexico City.
Hmm.
See what I mean?
Sure.
Right. This is, of course, assuming you have infinite resources. This is a game to be played by super rich people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Or people who are really bored.
Right.
And young and don't have any obligations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You'll meet again in May for National Tourism Day, where you'll be required to go to some sort of tourist trap. Doesn't matter what.
Great.
Yep. In July, you will meet for Build-A-Scarecrow Day.
Build-A-Scarecrow Day.
Yes. And Build-A-Scarecrow Day, you will meet on some sort of farm.
A farm.
September is Miniature Golf Day.
Of course it is.
Yes. And you will meet at some place like an arcade or miniature golf or somewhere where there's games such as that.
Sure.
And then November, False Confession Day, the day where it all ends. And you will meet at some place abandoned.
False Confession Day.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
You will meet at some place that is abandoned. Left up to the person. So it could be an abandoned building. It could be anything abandoned.
Okay.
A junkyard. So, and that's kind of the game. You know, each month you're going to be getting points and you'll be looking back and forth like, okay, these are the points I have. This is what everybody has. So it becomes a strategy of, you know, do I want to, like, if I know that you're way ahead, say you're like 30 points ahead and I've got the 13 and I'm kind of in the middle of the pack with everybody else.
Yeah.
We got to get, so I'm going to give you the 13 to try and hose you, you know.
Right.
Try and push you down if I can.
Okay. And so the points are tallied after every time you meet and everybody can see what everybody's points are.
Yep.
Before the next event. Okay. All right. What other kinds of challenges are there?
Well, like I said, I think having some physical challenges would be good, right?
Yeah.
Like whether it's, you know, the challenge that's so that's a tough part, right?
Yeah.
Because not knowing exactly where you're going to meet, the challenges are going to have to be open enough that, you know,
like run a race, like, race. Like steal something.
Steal something would be a good one. I mean, you might go to jail. stealing is bad, kids. Don't steal.
Right, but that's why this game should be 18 and up.
Right.
Yeah. Make friends with a stranger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Get someone's phone number.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, so some of this was inspired by, I don't know if anybody else watches this show. It's called Impractical Jokers. I'm going to talk about this show for just a minute.
Okay.
So the idea of this show is, it's a hidden camera show. But so many of the hidden camera shows, like the joke is on the person, you know, like who's like just walking up and not realizing it's a hidden camera show.
Yeah.
But in this one, the joke's on two people because it's four guys who are high school friends. And now they're like in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of stuff they did to each other just for the fun of it because they have like an improv troupe.
Mm.
But now they're on TV doing it. And basically what they do is they would go to an area. Like here's a good one they do. They will go to a business and they're going to give a presentation about sexual harassment, say, right? But they didn't write the presentation. The other two guys wrote the presentation and they've never seen it before. And the presentation will be absolutely terrible and they'll have to give it. And in the end, they ask how many people felt like they got value out of this and they'll raise their hands.
Uh-huh.
And then whatever team gets more wins that round. So like, it's kind of like forcing each other to go out and do things that will embarrass you.
Got
And they're terrible to each other. I mean, the stuff that they make people do. And one of their big things was to get to use someone else's cell phone, but you did not get to determine who you needed to call. They would hold up a sign that said, because I need to call, and would be like a Jewish Wookiee. And then they would have to try and convince the person via their suaveness,
right,
about why that was a real deal.
Got it.
You know? And it's, yeah. So thinking about that sort of thing, like that kind of makes me feel inspired for a game like this, right? Where you could really have a lot of fun with each other.
I could see some people really enjoying that. I would not be one of those people.
I think it would be fun. Like, I think it would be fun. Except for, like, I don't want to go to jail in a foreign country. That sounds not cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not want to do that.
Plus, what if you're playing with one dude who's super rich and he's like, all right, guys, first round, Antarctica, let's roll.
Yeah. Yeah, there'd have to be some discussion of the ground rules the beginning. Yeah. Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, this is kind of, I wanted to treat this kind of like as a thought experiment.
Because
I thought, why, you know, like I could just do something like I've been doing, but let's try to do something a little different.
And, right.
So yeah, this is what I came up with. I mean, I think it's a viable game. I think it's a game you could play. I think some of the mechanics, like I think especially the ranking mechanics, I think you could actually put that into a real game. And make that work where, you know, we each win a round and we get to look at the cards and decide if we want to keep it or give people negative. I kind of like that. I might repurpose that at some point for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, it's cool. So
right on.
So that was my pitch.
That was your pitch.
Now it's your pitch. And I'm told you said this to me today. I'm going to spoil this for everybody. You said, I feel like this game's pretty good. I feel like this game could be worthwhile. And I said, well, good, because that'll balance out my game.
Yeah. Right. No, I think my idea is not bad. So, you know, you start looking online for holidays, and I mean, there's just ridiculous stuff out there, right?
Yeah, I looked at some website. I don't remember what it's called, but there were tons of them.
Yeah, yeah. I did the same thing. I think I looked at a couple websites. And one of the things that I was finding was that, I mean, there are some holidays that are like official national holidays or state holidays. And then there are some that people just kind of made up on their own that, you know, that aren't really a thing. Like National Talk Like a Pirate Day. That's not a real national holiday because it hasn't been declared such by Congress.
Right.
That said, though, it's a big enough deal that people pretty much accept it as such.
Right.
But then there's Squirrel Awareness Day.
I saw that one. I almost used that one.
Yeah, which I think is a great idea, but it's like not a national holiday. It's something that was declared by a state environmentalist person, you know, and I think in North Carolina. I don't know. Anyway, so there's quite a range. So I was trying to make sure that I picked a holiday that was kind of a real thing, you know, maybe not declared officially by Congress, but that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah, and I actually started trying to do that, but then, because mine was so obscure and silly that I wanted to find the dumbest ones I could.
Yeah. That's fine. And then, you know, you start looking at every day of the year on those websites, and at some point, you just kind of, your eyes are going to cross. So, I went and I found my birthday. And I said, let's see if there's something on my birthday. June 6th, every year, is National Donut Day.
Oh. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, I know. Donuts, right? And I was like, oh, yeah, donuts. All right, making donuts. This is going to be a great game. And then I wonder where that came from. And so I started reading up on National Donut Day. National Donut Day is an amazing thing. Have you heard of National Donut Day?
I've heard of it.
Well,
because you just told me about it.
But do you know?
No, I don't.
Nobody, probably very, very few people know. Let me tell you about the history of National Donut Day.
Please.
Okay, because I think it's a
wonderful.
It's a wonderful thing. It started in World War One. Okay, World War One. We're fighting in Europe, and our soldiers on the front lines are miserable. You know, it's a miserable, miserable existence in trenches and everything. Just horrible stuff. Aid groups and things are trying to send care packages out to the troops. But the one thing that they just can't get is baked goods, you know, because baked goods don't keep to ship overseas. Right. You know, they don't even keep to ship from the base out to the front lines. They're not getting any baked goods, and baked goods are delicious and comforting.
I think we can agree on that.
And they make people feel good about themselves and about the world and about life. So the Salvation Army started a program of making donuts for soldiers on the front lines. And these were the only women who were allowed to go to the actual front lines in World War One, were women that became known as the donut dollies. And so they would, because to make a donut doesn't take much. It takes some oil and it takes some dough. You know, that's all you need. And you need something to cook that oil in. And these women, these donut dollies, would go out to the front lines, and they would take soldiers' helmets and they would fill them with oil, and they would heat up the oil on a fire there at the front lines and make these men donuts. What a cool thing, right?
And then as a bonus, one of the soldiers got to smell donuts for a week.
Right, in his helmet. How cool is that? Yeah. And I thought, man, what a great thing. And of course, then that over time, that turned into an annual fundraiser for the Salvation Army, which is a wonderful cause.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I thought, holy crap, what a great story. What a great setting to kind of build a game around, a kind of a narrative, you know?
Right.
So National Donut Day is the game, and the players are donut dollies. Okay.
You really should just call the game Donut Dollies. Because that's pretty awesome.
That is, yeah, that's not bad. So, the game would be called Donut Dollies.
I mean, how great is that, right?
It's pretty good, yeah.
The artwork for that would be super fun.
Oh, yeah, see, I can imagine it being all, like, gritty World War One and stuff, and, you know, just filthy guys, and then women, and just look like triumphant poses holding up donuts that are shining like the sun, you know? Just super cheeseball and propaganda-like, and I think it could be really cool. See what I'm talking about?
This is great.
It's a good setup. So, okay. So, there's kind of two phases to the game. All right. And maybe not phase is the right way to put it, but two kind of main functions in the game. All
uh-huh.
right. Okay. So, the majority of the game is spent in the camp, not on the front line, but just back from the front lines where the supply lines come up to. Okay. And this is where the donut dollies do most of their work. And you are trying to bake donuts and get them out to the soldiers on the front lines. Okay. On your turn. Let's do it this way. In order to bake a donut, you need oil, and you need a helmet, and you need fire to heat that oil to make your donut. Okay. You have dough. I'm going to say the donut dollies, they have dough. They don't need more dough. They've got the dough. They need oil, a helmet, and they need wood to build their fire. They need a lighter, to light the wood to build their fire. So when you're at the main supply lines, right, you as a donut dolly, as a representative of the Salvation Army, you can go to the quartermaster, and you can requisition two items per turn from the quartermaster, okay? The quartermaster is a deck of cards. Deck of item cards. And on your turn, you can get two cards from the quartermaster if you want to. And that's not necessarily going to be oil. It's not going to be a lighter. It's not going to be
right.
a helmet.
Top two cards, right?
Yeah, it's top two cards. It could be anything, you know. It could be a gun. It could be bullets. It could be soap. It could be cigarettes, you know. Stuff that soldiers need, right? Okay. It might be oil. It might be a lighter. Who knows? Okay. So you can get two cards from the quartermaster. That's one thing you can do on your turn. Alternatively, you can trade items that you have in your hand with soldiers that are back in camp. So there's a deck of cards in the quartermaster, and there's a deck of soldiers, All right. Okay. And let's say there's six soldiers in camp at any given time. Standard kind of thing. Every turn, every round, one soldier goes away, another one comes out. You know, they all kind of slide down.
And every style.
Yeah, every card, every soldier card is giving showing you something that he has and something that he wants. All right. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to give a trade the things you're getting from the quartermaster to the soldier to get the item that he has. Right.
Makes sense.
Okay. Alternatively, as you play cards to trade with soldiers, or you discard things from hand, they go in the garbage dump. You can also go digging through the dark garbage dump to get stuff that you want. Okay. You want to get, helmets, lighters, oil.
Right.
Okay. You might also get things like a re-roll of the dice, and I'm going to get to the dice in a minute. Things to mess with other players too, you know, special powers, special bonuses, this kind of stuff, right?
Because you want to stop the other people from making donuts for the troops on the
front
line?
Well, you want to be the first to get all the donuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to make them seem like jerky ladies.
Well, you know, it's a friendly competition.
I spilled your oil. Sorry.
Okay. So on your turn, take two cards from the quartermaster, take one card from the garbage dump, trade with the soldier. The other thing you can do is you can play your cards to start making donuts. So on your turn, if you have a bottle of oil, a helmet, and a lighter, you can start making donuts. Okay. All right. And then when you start making donuts, that's that you start rolling dice. Okay. And you have six dice. There are six D6s in the game. Four sides of them have donuts on them, and two sides have, like icky faces, meaning the oil's gone bad.
Okay.
Okay. And basically then you start rolling dice, and using pressure luck techniques to try and get as many donuts as you can before the oil goes bad.
Okay.
All right. So this is something I could use a little help with because I haven't played a lot of pressure luck games. So my thinking there is that if you get 50% or more of your dice to be the icky faces, then your oil's bad and you're ruined. Okay. You've lost whatever you got. So you roll your six dice. You can set aside up to two per turn.
Okay.
Okay. So if you roll your dice and you get six donuts, you can set aside two. Well, if you get six donuts, you might as well just quit because that's as good as you're going to do. You know,
you could just keep rolling, but that'd be no reason.
Right. If you don't like what you got, so let's say you want to re-roll and you have four donuts and two ickies. Well, you can only set aside two at the most. So you've got to set aside two donuts.
I see. So you can always just keep what you have.
Right.
Or you can keep rolling. Okay.
Exactly. Or you can take the chance. Exactly. And so if you ever get 50% or more ickies, then turns over.
On that roll that you did.
On that roll, then you lose everything.
Yeah. It's like it just turns out it was all bad.
Right. Exactly.
That's good for pressure luck. Okay. That's a little different too. I mean, some of them do it differently. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to keep it simple. So you get to, once you decide either once, if your oil goes bad, you lost everything, your turn's over, moves on to the next person. If you choose to stop, you keep whatever donuts you have and then you move your marker up. And the first person to get their donut dolly all the way to the front line, and let's say 10 spaces, 15 spaces, however long that needs to be, is the winner. First person to get all their donuts to get to the front lines to feed the soldiers is the winner. Pretty simple, pretty basic, pretty straightforward, but I think it's kind of a fun concept.
So to roll the dice, you have to be able to play the three cards that you need. Here's a quick question about that. When you say you're trading with the soldiers, mm-hmm. the soldier...
You pick up that soldier card and he goes in your hand.
Okay.
Right.
That was my question.
That represents the item
that you
traded
to. I figured
that
was what you were thinking,
Right. And then, you know, you might be picking up a soldier to get some other item and then trade that to get another soldier, you know?
Right, like maybe one soldier wants cigarettes and will give you bullets.
Right.
But another soldier will take those bullets and give you oil.
Exactly.
And you have cigarettes, so you might as well do that. Right. You could also do that defensively to stop someone
from
getting something.
Right, if you wanted to. You absolutely could. Yeah, so that's kind of the basic idea there. I don't know. I think it's kind of a fun, interesting concept and has a lot of potential for fun artwork and... I mean, it'll never happen because Salvation Army probably wouldn't appreciate me doing that.
Especially not since you make it look like the ladies are all catty and want to fight each other.
Well, I could take that option, but people like take that in games.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's a different possible... So we got some time. So here's a different possible direction you could take the dice rolling in. This is actually what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to do it like a dice pool where like the number of cards you put in gets you the number of... This could actually work. Say there's up to six dice, right?
Okay.
But each Yeah, no, that's not going to work. Never mind. I was just going to say that each, like, two, two, and two, they could be three different colors. One represents oil, one represents fire, one represents the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And each piece could go bad. So you could actually store dice in between turns. Meaning, like, the next time, like, all right, so for every one oil I play, I get one die. So if I play two oil cards, I'm going to get two oil dice, right?
Yeah.
If I play two fire cards, and my fire is going to last for the, both those dice. But if you get the icky face on one of those, then it's out. And you can't, so like, it would be a different kind of press your luck, right?
Okay.
It wouldn't be you could lose everything. It would just be, I guess that, yeah. I mean, it might take away some of the strategy. I'm not sure. It was just, I thought that you were going to go with the dice pool for some reason when you first, maybe I was thinking pools of oil and pools of dice.
Yeah.
Don't drop the dice in the hot oil, because that would probably...
That'd be terrible, yeah. Yeah, that'd be really bad.
Somebody once told me you could take dice and put them in the oven and bake them, like, for, like, on a certain setting for a few minutes, and it would cause the center of gravity to drop.
Really?
Yeah, so, like, you'd put it with, like, a D6, as you'd put the 6 side up, and it would cause it... In the inside, it would get a little melty, and it would cause the center of gravity to drop. To kind of
settle a little bit.
So that when you rolled it, it would be like loaded dice.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm not either. I like my dice, and I don't need to cheat, but...
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting thought, though.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah, there you go.
Them's some pitches.
Donut Dollies. That's my holiday game pitch. So we're looking forward to hearing what everybody else out there in the world has to suggest to us. Hopefully you can do better than me and Jason. I think you can do better than Jason. I don't know about me, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. That's a pretty dumb idea that you had there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just trying to do a design experiment, you know.
Okay, that's fine.
Not stay within the normal confines like we always do.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
Justify it, man.
Who needs to expand your mind, right?
It's okay. Yeah, no hard feelings.
Hey, here's some good news, though. So, yeah, so enter the contest. You have to the end of March.
Get us that.
Get on it. We've already gotten a couple entries, so thank you for those.
Yep.
Can't wait to see some more. I've heard from people saying there's more coming, so.
Good. Yeah, so, yeah looking forward to that.
All right, so, hey, the good news is we got a lot of questions tonight, so we're gonna take the rest of this time to go over a bunch of questions, because that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, first off, question from Board Game Links. I'm going to let you take this one, because it's about graphic design. When you do graphic design for a card game, do you design a page with a 9-card grid? Or one per page?
That's a good question. I mean, it's kind of just your own preference. I'll tell you what I actually do. I do an 8-card page for a print and play. I do an 8-card page. So
eight?
Yeah, and you can fit 9 cards on a page, but that's only if your printer prints to the full width and full length of the page. My inkjet printer at home always needs a larger margin on the bottom of the page for the feed rollers. So if I set up a full 9-card page on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, then my printer I have the option of either shrinking the image to fit, and so I get cards that are too small, or it will just simply cut off the bottom of the image. And I don't want to cut off, and I don't like my cards artificially small. So I am just grown accustomed to an 8-card page when I'm doing that. Now, if you're just doing 1 card per page, then you have more work to do to double it up to make sure you're printing efficiently and using the best use of your paper. But, you know, and to be even more specific, when I'm doing mock-ups and things, I just design 1 card at a time, and I'll create a template, and then I'll just copy and paste it. You know, each card is its own individual file in Photoshop or Illustrator or whatever, and then I just copy and paste it into a second file that is the 8-per-page setup. That's how I do that.
Right.
You know, whatever works for your method is fine,
though. And actually, so if I'm doing that for a rough prototype, I just do a Word document and I fit 9 per page. The cards are slightly small, but I put them in a sleeve, so I don't care.
Yeah.
But when I work in Photoshop, I also do an 8-card page. So you're correct on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it does feel a little better that way.
Yeah. But I mean, there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's kind of whatever works for you. That's just my preference. I got a question from Mr. Ben Pinchback. He was asking me if I'd made any headway on Aftermath. Aftermath, if anybody doesn't remember, was the first zombie game that I pitched, the zombie not zombie game, where you're cleaning up after the zombie apocalypse. I made a kind of a prototype layout for that, and I have my hand right here. I ordered a deck of mini cards from Game Crafter, because one of the key things about that game is that you had you started with a deck of mini cards that were different body parts that you would kind of drop and make a big messy pile on the table with them. And I tried to practice that with full size cards and it just didn't work. So I ordered a deck of mini cards to do that with. And the first thing I found is I ordered way too many.
That's a lot of cards.
Yeah. I'm ready to go on testing and prototype. I just haven't gotten around to it yet because I've been focusing on Rocket Wreckers. So,
right.
But yeah. I mean, I'm ready to go. So I'm still planning on giving it a shot.
Cool. Danny Devine wants to know, if we could go back in time, what design advice would you give to yourselves before recording your first podcast?
Oh, don't spend so much time on Danzel's in Distress, dude. Don't just knock it off. I mean, I know it sounded like a good idea and it still kind of sounds like a good idea in concept, but man, it was just not that good. It was just not that good.
So yeah, that's pretty specific advice. That was the first game you worked on though. So
yeah,
I think mine would be, not every idea is a good one.
Yeah.
Because so many times, and I still do this, I have an idea and I'm like, I got to prototype this game and try it.
You're still kind of that way, though.
That's what I said. Yeah, I'm still that way. I still would give myself that advice now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get better about it. Because, you know, it's hard sometimes to focus on the right stuff. Especially when the new idea sounds super shiny, you know, so.
Right.
So, yeah. So, that's certainly some advice I would give to myself. Maybe if I knew that going into it, I would have been better about it all along. Probably not. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I, beyond that, I don't know. I mean, we're still just, I don't know that we're any smarter than we were 2 years ago.
I think we're smarter than we were 2 years ago. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we're still that smart now. I think we're smarter than we were 2 years ago. I'm just saying that may not be saying much.
Marginally smarter.
Our buddy Jason Gitarski had two questions for us. First of all, well, I'm going to start with the second question because it goes into what I was just saying. How do you decide which games you want to focus your efforts on? For me, it's kind of the ideas that are still interesting after that first little bit of work on them. Like if I start working on a game and then it starts to kind of fall apart, like as in not fall apart, but be like, this isn't really a thing, you know, that I want to focus on for months, then I'll stop working on it and do something else. I don't know how that works for you.
Feedback from listeners is a big factor for me.
That is true. Yeah.
I mean, if a lot of people say, hey, that's a really cool idea, you should do more with that, then I'm more likely to do that.
Yeah.
That
happened to me with Transylvania.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people were like, that's a fun game, you should do that. Yeah. So
I don't know. I mean, there's so much stuff that I want to get back to. I don't know, man. I don't know. How do you decide? You just kind of, I find myself bouncing around between stuff a lot. You know, like I said, I bought a deck of cards to test for Aftermath and haven't even tried it since I got those cards. I've had these for several weeks now, you know. I mean, I've been working on Rocket Wreckers off and on for more than a year now. You just kind of whatever feels exciting at the time, I guess, you know.
Cool. Yeah. He also wants to know, how important is novelty in mechanics? And this is something we talked a little bit about on Something for Nothing.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the consensus we came up with. You can correct me if you don't agree, but is that novelty is really cool, and it's cool to have novel mechanics as long as they're still intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many times, like, there's a reason that a lot of mechanics are used in a lot of games because they're familiar and they work.
Mm-hmm.
And novel mechanics are great when they work, but you can also have, you know, novelty mechanics that don't work.
Right.
So, like, going around the world to play your game.
Right. Yeah. Ultimately, I don't know. I don't know. There's a whole lot else to say about that. I mean, if they work and they're easy to understand and they're intuitive and they make sense for the game the experience you're trying to create, then it's a great idea. But don't shoehorn something weird into it just to shoehorn something weird into it. Honestly, I'm worried that might be something that is holding Maelstrom back a little bit. That I think the way that works is pretty unique and pretty novel, but it's not terribly familiar to people. And so I'm worried that maybe it's preventing some people from getting excited about it and getting interested in it.
Well, and the one thing that I would say about that game that I can think fits that category, don't get me wrong, the game is awesome. It's one of my favorite games you've designed. It's mm-hmm. so fun. But it's kind of a weird mishmash feeling of mechanics, right? It's yeah. like worker placement mm-hmm. and then the circular movement, kind of like a right. racing game.
Yeah, and it's the circular movement that I'm referring to.
Right,
That's different and kind of unique and also unfamiliar.
But it's also what makes the game awesome.
Well, I think so. But
so does most of the people that played it.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Anyway.
Next one from Board Game Links again. They just wanted to let us know, Beavers Be Damned. Plus one. So let's take a second to talk about that.
Yeah.
We threw that challenge out last week. Well, not a challenge. It was more of a question. We said, hey, guys, we're thinking about co-designing this game, but we're not sure. I think it sounds like fun. Rob thinks it's something's fun, but we're not 100% sold that that theme is perfect. And when I say we're, I mean mostly Rob.
Yeah.
So as he said in the last episode.
Yeah.
So far, as of this recording right now, and the one we just got from Board Game Links, we have 6 people have said... you should make it, which is pretty cool because we have released the episode like 2 days ago. So, hey, good for us. We need 20 though. If you want us to do it, we need to hear from 20 people. So we still got a lot of people to hear from. So mm-hmm. by all means, if you think it's a good idea, don't just do it to be nice.
Yeah.
Only do yes, it please, if you genuinely. Think it's a, you know, if you think it's a good idea and you think we should make that game, by all means, give us a plus one, give us a thumbs up.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll do it. But if you don't, you know, if you think it's a terrible idea, tell us that too. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to count that against us, but it would be good to know.
Don't let us waste our time if it sounds stupid.
So, because if this is something we work together on, this would be a big time commitment. So we want to make sure it's you know,
right.
correct.
Right.
Cool. So there's that. And then Board Game Links actually had another one.
Man.
Thank you, Board Game Links. Nice. By the way, go to Board Game Links.
Yeah.
And give us a little heart.
Give us an upvote. Yeah.
Yeah. We're somewhere in the 70s or 80s in the websites.
Oh, cool.
Because they combine podcasts and websites just because most of us podcasters have a website.
Sure.
We're low on that list. Get us up there. I know that we have a lot more listeners than we have pluses on
Absolutely.
That list. This one, I'm going to answer this first so you don't steal my answer. I don't know. You probably won't, but I don't know. who is your favorite game designer and why? I know what you're thinking. My favorite game designer is Rob. It's not, actually. He's my favorite person to record a podcast with, though. My favorite game designer, I can say with conviction, for absolute sure, is Bruno Cathala. The reason I say that is he's the guy who designed Phantom of the Opera, which I argue is... one of the best two-player games you'll ever play in your life, ever. You should go buy it.
Yeah, it's spectacular.
And two is because he designed a game called Lawless, which most people haven't heard of. But Lawless is the game, I've said this before on the show, that made me want to start designing games.
Yeah.
It's not an amazing, crazy game. I mean, it's just a game about herding cattle and shooting people. But I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me want to design games. So that guy has to be my favorite designer because, yeah.
Yeah, gosh, I don't know.
I know, it's me. I know. I could have said you and you could have said me and we could have looked like...
No,
would have looked fake.
No, because it would be a total lie. All right, well...
It's tough, isn't it?
It is tough.
You have to think about, like...
Who designed Clue, you know? I don't know. I don't know who that person is, and maybe that doesn't even count anymore because Clue, or as it was originally, is not Clue as it is today. You know, I mean, I guess maybe this is kind of cliche, but maybe it's Gary Gygax.
Oh, that's fair. That's you know? A good one
because if I think about the games that really influenced me as a young person that I still get excited about. I mean, even though D&D is a completely different game today than it was, and it's going to be even more different when the next version comes out.
Right.
So much, it's so different from what it was when he originally played it. And when I played it as a high school kid, you know, AD&D, any interest that I have in tabletop games, apart from playing Clue as a kid, came from playing D&D, so I it's probably Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson because they did that together, you know.
Yep.
I'm not sure. I can't say beyond that.
That's a super good answer. That's a super good answer.
Yeah.
I was smiling because I was thinking of Dave Arneson.
Yeah.
In HoboCon.
Right.
Dave Arneson's in HoboCon. He probably did not know that before he passed away.
Right.
But there's an amazing moment with Dave Arneson.
It's almost the highlight of the film for me and Jason anyway.
Yeah. And one of the reasons, I'm presuming, that Gen Con was not a fan of the documentary.
Right.
Anyway. Ellen, speaking of which, John Du Bois, Dubois? Dubois, sorry. Every time I read it, I read John Du Bois because I'm a loser
you're from
the Midwest. Yeah, sorry about your luck, John. John offered that we should get together and have some beer at Gen Con so he can hear the story. And we're into that. Anybody else who's interested in that, by all means, feed us some beer and we'll tell you the story.
Right, we've talked about HoboCon so much. I double-checked the other day. You can still get that on Indie Press Revolution. They have like 100 copies still in stock. So if you guys are interested, you can go to IndiePressRevolution.com and search for HoboCon and get your own copy.
So... And someday maybe we'll sell them on our site too.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. Got a
we'll
big box
see
of them.
If we ever do that, we do have a big box left. So,
so anything else?
That. I think we have some. Hey, so we got an email from Justin Hart. He said, "Hey guys, I always enjoy the show and have gotten a lot of information from inspiration from something from nothing. Thank you.
Glad. Yeah, that's great."
He said, "In episode 89, you were describing mechanics for a zombie race game, and my mind kept thinking of Junkyard Robots more than zombies. That's actually a neat idea. Perhaps it's because you can program them and upload new abilities. I couldn't quite figure out how you would give a new ability to a zombie." One cool thing
conditioning,
about the,
man.
One cool
conditioning
thing about the change, it's like Pavlov's zombies, would be that you could hack into other players' robots secretly at times and purposely cause malfunctions, and at other times that might not work out as well. Take it or leave it, but I wanted to share it. That's an interesting idea.
I didn't
think of that. Mm-hmm. Robots are always cool, too. So,
Robots are good. Robots, generally, as a theme, are more appealing to me than zombies. But I think I will probably stick with zombies for that, only because I still like the idea of it being a zombie game that's not about zombies doing what zombies do.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that could totally work as robots as well. And that hacking the other robots idea is actually a pretty good one.
We also get an email here from Michael K. And Michael sent us a design challenge. He said, if you ever don't have a feature to talk about for a week and you need something to do, he sent us a design challenge that's pretty interesting. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to save it.
Okay.
I would not be surprised if sometime in the future, not even the not too distant future, we have a week where we don't have a feature to talk about. Because sometimes we're not sure what to talk about for the week. So, So this would just be a thing where there are some rules and we would try and come up with a game on the spot. And that's always fun for us. So, I think that's everything I have for comments.
Just one more thing. We got an email from Nick Shaw. He had commented on my snowplow solo game concept and had some encouraging stuff to say about it. And he said that one power that I could put into it is a sat nav. And he said it lets you see a number of cards ahead in the road deck, which I think that is a great idea. I mean, that would be an excellent one to add to the to the truck deck in that game.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and that's another one that I got more feedback about the snowplow game than I expected to, because
you did.
You know, a solo game, I didn't think too many people would be terribly interested in it, and it sounds like such a kind of a basic idea. So if you guys think that that's something that I should pursue, let me know. Like I said, feedback is a big motivator for me, so let us know. I think that's all we got then, eh?
I think so.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening to Building the Game. We really, really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland. I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you want to. And you can come on back every week and listen to our crazy show. And hopefully I won't do anything else that I have to apologize for anytime soon.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
I had these poles in my garage that I had. They were my desk legs, because it was just like steel pipe with these round, you know, like things in the end. Those like the foots that have the things so you could screw them in.
Foots. Go on.
Because it's not like feet, like your real feet.
Uh-huh.
It's like a footy thing that like hooks on the end.
I got it.
So.
Go on.
What? Anyways, one of those would be like the best like zombie club, man.
Yeah.
Since you're super heavy. I actually was using it to break ice in my driveway. True story.
That's good. I use a shovel.
Yeah, this is harder than a shovel because it's a steel pipe.
Yeah, well, I use a steel-bladed shovel. I don't use just a snow shovel for the, for breaking up ice.
I have a steel-bladed shovel. I use that too, but this is better. It also feels really cool. She's like, rah, I'm smashing, smashing.
Yeah.
And I pretend they're zombies. That's cool. Don't, but.
You do, though, don't you? A little bit.
Maybe a little.
A little bit, yeah.